afternoon, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting at republicbroadcasting.org. Today is Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. And of course, I'd like to remind everyone, RBN is listener-supported, so do what you can. Free speech cannot exist without being funded by we, the people. You can use PayPal on the RBN website donate page. You can call our RBN staff if you want to donate via credit or debit card. Call in to donate at 800-724-2719, extension 3. Or you can mail in that donation, cash, check, money order, payable to RBN, mailing address 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And we greatly appreciate it, folks. Please help ensure RBN can continue broadcasting this uncensored content well into the future. And this being Tuesday, I have my regular Tuesday co-host, Paul in California, here with me. Hello, Paul.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing good. Yes, hope you are well. And we have a special returning guest. I haven't managed to have on for quite some time since like near the start of the year, folks. But I'm very pleased to announce we have Gerhard Lauck back with us. Now, for those who may have missed previous interviews, Gerhard is a publisher, a political activist, researcher, a free speech advocate, and political organizer who's contributed with an enormous impact over the course of many decades. Gerhard actually runs multiple websites, companies. He has a censor-free web hosting service. The German name is Zensurfrei, and he's a publisher of reproductions of the original books with a positive, truthful National Socialist propaganda. Propaganda doesn't always mean lies. From the Third Reich, Third Reich books. And Gerhard is an active member of the NSDAP / AO, which is the Ausländer Division, those who are party members residing outside of Germany. And so, rather than to separate the fact from the fiction, you know, I think it's good because we have so much demonization with propaganda. I mean, everyone hears about these Soros-backed so-called quote-unquote neo-Nazis in Ukraine. And, it's just a complete farce, completely opposite, polar opposite what true principles are, folks. And so back again, I have none other than Mr. Gerhard Lauck, honored to have back with us. Hello, Gerhard.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I'm glad to be back on again.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I should mention the main website. I don't believe I mentioned that. NSDAP.info is still the is that still the current website?
There's a slight change in February of this year. One of our registrars seized a few of our domains. We believe it was an unlawful and an illegal action. We have filed a formal complaint with ICON to contest it, but we have not gotten satisfaction yet. Therefore, that specific website, we have replaced it with multiple replacements, but the primary one right now to reach the political operation would be nsdapao.info, as opposed to just the old one was nsdap.info, now it's nsdapao.info. We hope to get the old domain back eventually, but I'm not holding my breath on that. It was an unprecedented move. They admit in writing that they did this on instructions or request to order some of the German police. And it's interesting, why would an American, North American company obey orders from a foreign government to close down a website that is totally legal in America and a domain for a website that is legal in America and is which is actually protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. We consider this to be pretty a questionable action, which is why we're contesting that. Now, since these, of course, justice and rational logic have nothing to do with the political and situation today in America and in most of Russian civilization, so what we've done is we've created new back websites, and to get around this domain name seizure problem, on the new websites we've created, and there's multiple ones, we register multiple domain names with different registrars in different countries. So even if one or two participate in the seizure of a domain, there's another one already in place to back it up in a different country. So it's very, very hard, if not almost impossible, for them to close all domain names simultaneously from a website. Another step we took is to further improve security. Instead of using standard programs that are very popular and easy to use, but also easy to hack, because a lot of the hackers have devised ways to get into these things, the replacement websites are they're custom built, they're hand coded, and they're almost impossible to hack because only the people who created the websites, who are very highly skilled professionals and reliable, know enough about the internal workings to try to do anything to attack them. Plus, of course, we have our own servers with very strong security measures because our client sites, we have hundreds of them on our servers, hundreds of websites on our servers. Some of them are clients and some of them are our own websites. Most of the client websites are actually technically not illegal even in the foreign countries, but they are politically incorrect enough that they come under heat with the web host companies refusing to host them or with the hack or tax and this sort of thing. And with the other set of websites, the ones we do have internally, our own websites as opposed to client websites, many of those are basically all legal under U.S. law, of course. And many of them are not even hardcore national socialists. Some are hardcore NS with swastikas and everything on it, like the NSDAPAO.info. And other ones are a little bit more moderate to appeal to a different audience to kind of nudge people in our direction. Now, that operation is Zofi.com or censorfree. The easiest way probably to find that is if they go to the NSDAPAO.info. And the reason I mention that is if you go to that website, you will find very prominent banner ads for the Censorify operation and for our book publishing operation. The books is published. The website is third-reich-books.com. Now, just a few days ago, I went to Google and I entered that. It came right up at the top of the search engines, even without the hyphen, so you can probably find it that way. Another way to find us, if you get some of this, is just put in my last name, Lauck, L-A-U-C-K. If you type in either Gerhard or Gary Lauck, my websites do not come up right away because they're basically being semi-blocked by the SEO companies because they don't want us to get publicity. But if you go in there and search you on, you'll be able to find something on me. And if you search maybe two or three links and you go down, you'll be able to find a way to contact me that way. So there's multiple ways to get a hold of us. The easiest, again, being go to NSDAPAO.info. That's the easiest way to find links to their operations. Essentially, we've got three main divisions, so to speak. One is the web hosting division, Censorify.com, which has hundreds of websites. Another one is the Third-Reich-Books.com, which publishes translations of Third Reich books from the original German into English and other languages with no comments. We don't say it's good, we don't say it's bad, it's strictly historical, but very accurate. We have published approximately 400 books. Roughly half of them are English translations of the German originals. Most of those I personally translated over a period of many years. And then we also have quite a few in other languages, Italian, German, and there's, I think, like a dozen different languages, but roughly half are in English. So if you're interested in the Third Reich and you want to see what the Third Reich people actually wrote about themselves, instead of reading a post-war Jewish distortion of the facts, you can look. It's a good place to go. Most of these books are very low cost. It costs like $10 or something each. They're fairly small softcover books. We have full house in publishing facilities in both the United States and in Europe as part of our decentralization operation. Even if they wiped out our North American bases, we would still have something in Europe and vice versa. So we're very decentralized and diversified geographically and subject-wise. In terms of the political operation, they consist primarily of the publication of periodicals. Now, about the same time that we're going through this mess with the domain names and that, we launched another project, and we've expanded our periodicals. Back in the 1990s, we were publishing 10 tabloid newspapers in 10 languages, and they came out anywhere from two, three, four times a year, each language edition. When the Internet got going and the print media became a little less important and more expensive, especially the postage, we downsized the periodicals. And for the last several years, we had been publishing maybe 50 to 100 issues a year in various languages, all combined. Now, this spring, we did something. We expanded that division. We are now publishing periodicals, both weekly and monthly, in over 20 languages. The weekly publications are online only. The monthly publications are both online and in print versions. So people, if they want to, they can go online, read the publication, no cost or obligation. They don't have to give us any contact information, an email address, or anything like that. If they want a hard copy, for, you know, to mail to them a hard copy, then they can subscribe, and that costs a little bit of money, but not too much. At present, we are publishing periodicals between the weeklies and monthlies in these 20-some languages at a rate of over 1,000 issues a year, as opposed to the old rate of maybe 50 to 100 a year. So that's a major expansion in that regard. And that also, you can find those periodicals by, if you go to nsdapao.info and click on that, we have links for any of those publications. And then I'll just FYI on this, the publications themselves, the periodicals, I should say, are not on NSDAPAO. When you click on that, it's going to take you to another website that we control, nsdapao.org. And the reason we did this is diversification. We figure out if we come under attack, we have multiple lines of defense. The entry website, nsdap.ao.info, that has the least amount of information on it in terms of uploads and complications to make it harder to hack. The second website it goes to has the periodicals, thus has an upload function for us. Now, we take very deep security factors. We take security measures to decrease the chance of them getting in there despite the upload function. But nonetheless, the fact that it is an upload function increases the vulnerability a little bit, and that's where we created a second website separate from the primary one. We have a whole network of websites that are interconnected, so they can take down some websites, but they don't take down everything.
Well, no, that's a very extensive description, very extensive network for all your sites, really. So, no, that's all good information. Certainly get people interested in checking out that which they are each interested in. I have my co-host here, Paul, and he's been, you know, an avid researcher for his lifetime. He was interested, certainly, to speak with you, to meet you today. And Paul, I understand you have some questions for our guest, some things you'd like to discuss.
Sure, absolutely. Pleasure to meet you, Gerhard. Richard gave me a little homework assignment, and he sent me some interviews that you did with Kyle Hunt over at Renegade Broadcasting, and I took a couple of those in. What I just heard this morning on this show was quite impressive. One of the things that struck me, you said in an interview, I think it was the one in 2016, I think there was actually two in 16 and another in 17, I believe. But you were talking with Kyle about the old days before the Internet, and you made a comparison, which I found very interesting and at the same time likely true, where you said that before, you know, with actual literature, flyers, and also, exchanging information directly with people and mail, that your conversion rate, this term that you used, was about 1 in 3. As opposed to the Internet, which you described as more voyeuristic, and that you said it was probably like 1 in 10,000. And I thought that was absolutely interesting and appropriate. And I was just wondering, I mean, it's been, you know, about six years or so since that interview. And do you have any kind of a feeling or sense of things changing? I don't know. To me, I think it's palpable without having any hard data, that more and more people are not only open to this information, but are actually taking it in and waking up. What would be your sense of that?
My impression is correct, because you had Obama, and then Trump came in. It was Trump speaking to the main thing about, the fact about him is, despite the fact that Trump was opposed by all of the mainstream media and both political parties, really, he still won. So that's a huge achievement, whether we love them or hate them, whatever, that's a huge achievement. It's sure that people are fed up with the mass media and they want something that's a more conservative, patriotic, whatever you want to call it. Now, then after Trump, when after the election that he supposedly lost, and that's another subject, they got stuck with Biden. And the contrast of going from bad Obama, good under Trump, to even worse under Biden, this radical of a shift within a period of just 5-6 years, that's woken a lot of people up. I mean, the biggest threat we have in America and the rest of civilization is if our decline is so gradual that, like the frog, you put him in water and slowly bring it to the boil, he'll never jump out and he'll just boil to death. That if you put him in hot water, the sun changed from very hot to very cold, or vice versa, then it really wakes him up and you get some reaction out of him. So I think that's definitely correct. Another factor is that people have known for a long time that the mass media is biased to liberalism, but until Trump got in, they didn't really fully appreciate just how radical and biased and deceitful the so-called mainstream media is. It's one thing to be slightly biased. It's another thing to lie through your teeth year after year with a demonstrable lie. So it's radicalized them in that regard. And another factor is with this COVID thing. For many years, people figured, okay, politicians are crooks and businessmen want to make money, but certainly I can trust my family doctor. Well, that's been shot now, too, with Big Pharma and the way they handled this whole COVID thing with the vaccines and the things that are getting out even now. So people are becoming very radicalized on multiple fronts, and it's affecting them directly. We have the bad economy now. We have these vaccination-related injuries and negative reactions to that are hitting more and more people. And when these things hit you personally or a family member, a close friend, that means a lot more than some guy in a talk show claiming that something happened or claiming a statistic or two different experts debating various things. When it hits you personally or your friends or family, that is a shocking thing. So I think there is a much more openness to various things. At this point, people are not necessarily ready to join the National Socialist Party and taking a very strong anti-black, anti-Jew issue, et cetera, et cetera. But they're certainly moving in our direction in the slums of the MAGA movement. And within the MAGA movement, there's more and more people that are gradually drifting closer and closer to us. I have many, I'm semi-retired now, I'd say semi-retired, semi-senile, in a small town in rural Nebraska. And 4,000 population, and a lot of people know me, and I get along with them fine. Now, that doesn't mean that they all know I'm NS or want to join the party, but then you're basically a decent fellow. You can talk common sense, and in terms of general values and general appreciation of the situation, we're on the same side. And I tell them basically, as the country's more and more polarized between the right and the left, red state, blue state, whatever you want to call it. But this is much more radical than the 1960s. In the 60s, you had the issues of the Vietnam War, which ended, and you had forced integration, which was a big issue for a while, but it primarily affected people in the white working-class neighborhoods adjacent to the ghettos because they got invaded. And even a lot of them just moved out to the suburbs. So it hit them temporarily, but after they moved out to the suburbs, the effect of the black invasion wasn't as great. So those issues, kind of blacks are relatively happy because they got their welfare. But it's different now. We have the large-scale non-white immigration coming and causing all sorts of social and economic problems. We have the wars like in Afghanistan and the Middle East where we are losing people for no good reason. We have the COVID situation. We have the corruption and lies in the White House. There's a general sense the federal government does not work. It's dysfunctional. We can no longer the old term was. It used to be in the old days, is every 4 years, you held your nose and voted for the lesser of two evils, and then you went back to your normal everyday life at your job in the community. But now it's getting much more radical than that. We can't just hold our nose. We have to take a side, and what's drifting towards a cultural civil war, whether it's a military civil war, that's another issue. At the very least, it's a cultural civil war, and it's obviously a political one, too. And it's not even an ideological war so much as a spiritual war. Because in the old days, in the 60s, the conservatives and liberals, we could argue with each other passionately, but we recognized the guy we were talking to was basically a decent human being who was a patriotic American and wanted to make the world a better place, even though he had a very different idea of how to do it, which is why we would fight. Today, it's not like that anymore. today both sides hate each other. Actually, the left hates the right more than the right hates the left. But the what I tell people is on the one side we have the far left, the progressives now, they hate America, they hate Western civilization, and they hate white people. They want to destroy all three of these things. They're not sincere idealists trying to fix them. They hate us. They want to destroy us. On the other side, you have people who love America, love Western civilization, and at the very least are not anti-white, regardless of whether they consider themselves white racists or not. That wide of a gap, we cannot cure by having a little compromise solution or passing a law or electing a politician or getting one judicial court situation. This is going to come to a head eventually, and it's going to be basically all hell is going to break loose. It reminds me a little bit of the Spanish Civil War. In Spanish Civil War, what happened is you had this ideological divide growing and growing and growing. Then there was the election that the left claims they won. The right didn't believe it, and the revolution broke out. Well, it didn't happen with Trump in 2020, but imagine what would happen if, say, in 2024, someone like Biden actually wins the election, and it's so obvious to everybody that was stolen. Are they going to sit back again and say, we're going to wait for the Supreme Court to say we don't hear the case and accept it? Or are they going to say, hell, I don't care what the president says. I don't care what Congress says. I don't care what the Supreme Court says. I'm going to draw a line in the sand, and if they cross this line, then I revolt, and I won't be alone. That's the general direction of this.
Wow. That was, shall we say, a lot more than I bargained for. I don't disagree with much of what you said. As a matter of fact, Richard knows me quite well, and I've long believed that there is no political solution. I think the system is so far beyond repair being useful that it absolutely has to so-called collapse or get so bad before we even have a chance to make it better. And I think it's actually desirable for things to get worse, which it seems to, not that I'm an expert, and I was never there in any of these countries that have allegedly kicked out the Jews, hundreds of times throughout history. But one can imagine it was a similar behavior, since behavior tends to be innate. They just kept going and going and going without any thought about how bad they were making it and what was coming their way. And I just can't see that going any other direction in this country. Even if people don't buy into National Socialist ideology, they are indeed in their minds and their hearts National Socialists. There were some so-called, right-wing or what you call the alt-right, and also some National Socialist influencers, various some YouTube channels and some other video platforms. And a few years ago, they actually went out and, did these interviews where they posed questions based upon National Socialist writings and also the 25-point platform of the National Socialist Party. And they got all kinds of liberals and regular everyday normies to agree, even though they didn't really know what they were agreeing with. They just agreed in principle to what they heard. And I thought that was very interesting.
Well, we just have to present the message to the audience in America today that they can relate to. We can't just parrot propaganda from 100 years ago in Germany with the terminology. We have to Americanize it. We're not changing the fundamental ideas, but just Americanize it. I remember one time, not that long ago, I was in a line. This is a small town. They're mostly senior citizens, about a dozen people waiting for something. And small towns, people are very open, just getting, conversations. And somebody made a comment about how sad it was that young Americans were going over to these foreign countries and getting killed in these third world wars over in Afghanistan, Iraq, wherever it was at the time. And one of the World War II veterans said, yeah, it's not like World War II that we had to get into. And I couldn't let that one slide, okay? But so I told him, I says, well, look, in World War II, what happened? You had the result of World War II, you had the Soviet Union was communist, atheistic dictatorship. America was Christian, capitalist, and a free democracy. So why did the Americans want to help? Basically, America saved communism in World War II. And what was the result? The communists took over Eastern Europe. We had the Cold War. We had the threat of nuclear war. We had the spread of communism to Asia, with China. We had the forced war that America did not win, Korea. We had the forced war that America actually lost, as opposed to Thai Vietnam. And I mentioned half a dozen things like this, without attacking him as a veteran or saying anything directly good about Adolf Hitler. And after I finished, he stood there, looked at me for a second, then he reached his hand over and thanked me for explaining it to him. This is a World War II minute, thanking me for explaining basically National Socialist talking points, but presented in a way that made perfect sense to the average American. And when I talked to the people here, like, some know I'm NS, I'm fairly well known here, so a lot of them do know I'm NS, but I don't come out saying, hello, here's my company, I want you to join the Nazi Party. Most of the conversations are just social neighborly stuff to establish a rapport. If politics does come up, we'll talk about issues that interest them, not World War II revisionist history, the Jewish question, or black IQ. They don't care about these things. And we get the idea across that America, there's two sides in America. We have the patriots versus the progressives, or the patriots versus the parasites. And I use different terminology a little bit, depending on who I'm talking to. And basically, when the shit hits the fan, or the extreme hits the fan, we're on the same side. It doesn't make a difference whether I'm a national socialist. We're on the same side. You have the good patriotic Americans fighting against the traitors, the progressives, and the parasites. And this is the logic they can understand, and they can accept me on this basis. And as long as they accept me as an ally and a comrade on the same side fighting against the same enemy, it is not necessary for me to drag them 100% in ideological agreement and change the terminology and outward dress to be NS in the narrow sense of the word. If they are interested in NS, sure, I'll talk about National Socialism and feel like if they express an interest, I'll talk to them about that. But I don't start off with that, and even when I do bring them over, I don't say, okay, now I've got an excuse to bring up World War II. I don't do that unless it fits within the context of the conversation for the average person. And you'd be surprised. Right. People visit us from the big cities, and they come out visit us here in rural Nebraska, and they see me make the rounds on my morning. I take a walk just about every day for exercise, and old and decrepit, but not too decrepit to walk yet. And I'll stop by the various stores, and I'll get in small talk with some of the store owners and that. And when some of my visitors visit me and they hear just how radical I can get, and all they're smiling and nodding, they're amazed. So it is possible.
Right. I would imagine, too, that you, if you were in England, you'd probably also have a very receptive audience. Of all that list of the things that you just said, the one that you left out, and I know you didn't mean to, but England, of course, lost their empire, and they are being essentially demographically and racially destroyed. My brother has lived in Berlin for about 20-something years now, and he used to like to go to London. He had a girlfriend that worked in London for a while, but he got to the point where he could not stand to go there because it wasn't a British city anymore.
The famous British actor, I don't want to give him a tour by mentioning his name, but he was on some talk show sometime. He said, London is not a British city anymore. London's not British, period. They've already lost the capital. Because they had a lot of Americans. Look at California. I mean, California is my majority non-white. It's controlled by insane leftists. Friends of mine who grew up in Southern California back in the 50s, 60s, 70s remember when it was a paradise and relatively conservative. And now it's a third world hellhole. So we're facing this throughout Western civilization in the UK and in America and in Germany and in France. There's a lot of things are building up to the point. Now, some of my friends are a little bit worried about, things only get so bad they can't fix it. They get a little bit defeatist. But I say, no, every time I hear about the enemy doing something really obnoxious and terrible, I take that as a good sign because they're just giving us one more stone to throw at. They're just digging their grave deeper. The best propaganda we have, there's an old saying, with friends like this, who needs enemies? And there's another old saying, with enemies like that, who needs friends? The idiocy and insanity of the far left is the very best propaganda we have. Even
Absolutely.
Our best propagandists are not nearly as effective winning people outside as our enemies when they do these insane things.
Very well put, sir. We have the bottom of the hour commercial break. We'll be right back. Stick around, folks.
Truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
It's time to double down. I'm Peter Serafine, and yesterday's Liberty Minute ruffled some feathers, so I'm going all in today. If I take out a loan and make a bad investment, I still have to pay back the loan. Real estate, business, stocks, crypto, the investment doesn't matter. So why should student loans be an exception? College is an investment. You choose to go to college. You select your course of study. You pick the school. You decided to take out the loan. You are responsible. Oh, but the school lied. Or my advisor was horrible. Yeah, that's unfortunate. I'm sorry. But it's still your debt. And your debt is your responsibility and only your responsibility. I am tired of my hard-earned tax dollars going to bail out the bad decisions of banks, businesses, or individuals. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Cibus Pascem, Parabellum.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
They're making the last film. They say it's the best, and we'll help make it. It's called The Death of the West. The kids from fame will all be there. Free Coca-Cola for you.
And we are back, folks. Beyond the official narrative. Republic Broadcasting, Richard Carey here with co-host Paul in California, and our special guest today, Gerhard Lauck. And I was going to just reference something. It's very interesting. You've mentioned in past interviews, Gerhard, is how, well, kind of on the point when we were going into break, in the 60s and 70s, it sounds like you describe a resurgence. I mean, you know, in addition to members interested on varying levels, as you describe. In the 80s, there was a sizable legal wing in Germany, at least in particular, which made not as many people resort to the underground because they felt they were winning politically. Then in the 90s, there was a resurgence in the underground and in organizations such as the NSDAP, in particular in Germany, having banned 12 legal organizations in Germany after the Berlin Wall fell. So I don't know, it just seemed related to the topic you were just bringing up.
Yes, well, it goes up and down, but it's not a big deal because in Germany, the legal and illegal wings are like two different branches of the same military, so we do not view each other as competitors. Like, oh my God, there's my recruits going to the Air Force and the Navy or vice versa. It's a little bit different there, but I know what you mean. It's primarily legal activities now. Plus, you got the legal wing activities, you have internet activism, and you have low-cost desktop publishing. So the main thrust there in Germany today is much different than it was in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Okay, and I mean, there's still a debate today with people who are more hardcore about Jewish power and all of these topics, as opposed to people who think there are still political solutions, and like there's only one extreme or the other, nothing in between. You seem to not think like that. There are always both, it seems, you think.
What I have to keep in mind is people have to evolve. We're not going to go from kosher conservative to hardcore national socialist revolution overnight. But people have to go through an evolutionary process. So when people look at, even within the NS movement, there are mixed feelings on Trump. Some people say he's terrible because he's, you know, pro-Zionist and he has Jews in his cabinet, et cetera, et cetera. And other people say, no, he's really good because he's really energized the American right. Basically, the American people are very good, decent people, and he's energized them, which is a good thing, regardless of whether they're totally on board with us ideologically. I view it kind of like, well, is the glass half full or half empty? I consider this to be an evolution in our direction. So I think it's a positive step in our direction, a very important step, but I don't think it's the final solution to this step. I suspect that even if a very strong patriotic movement comes to power in Washington, D.C. by legal means and controls the White House and dominates Congress and even has people in the Supreme Court, I think it would be good. I think it would do a lot of... They'd make a lot of progress, but I don't think it actually solved the problem totally, because I suspect that the deep state is simply too deeply entrenched in the government, and they can just wait it out, and it does not hit the main source of the enemy's power is not the U.S. government. The main source of the enemy's power is the financial industry, which is parasitic, and the mass media, which you can buy if you have enough money. So even if we took over the bulk of the government by democratic means within the... As long as the enemy dominates the financial industry and the mass media, it's going to be really pretty hard to get final victory on this. And you have another problem is with the balance of power between the division of powers, branches of the government, executive, judicial, legislative. Any attempt to solve the problem within the context of the system, the founding fathers did not trust the government, so they made it very difficult to get things done. Now, it's easier to destroy than it is to build. And the same things that slow down the enemy taking over the United States government or dominating the federal government are going to make it much more difficult for our people to take it back by traditional constitutional means. Now, theoretically, like in Germany in 1943 or the ancient Roman Republic, in those days, if there's a crisis, you say, hey, this is a crisis, to hell with, you know, let's appoint a temporary dictator for 6 months to clean house. Now, I'm not saying we should or should not do that, but that type of solution, I don't think is going to happen in America. I don't think that the mega people would accept that thing. I don't think the American public would accept it. I'm not saying they should or should not, but I don't really see a...
I disagree with that.
By conventional means. I believe that they should engage in conventional politics to do what they can to help wake people up. I think it's an important step, but it's not the final solution.
I want to focus on one point you just made, which I actually disagree with. And you said that you don't think that the MAGA people would be tolerant of, you know, sort of a dictatorial kind of a takeover. And I do agree with the other part, like a lot of the other American people might not. But, you know, here's where I would, you know, differ. I believe that Trump was, you know, people have described it as a dog whistle, you know, National Socialist dog whistle. And I certainly believe that he's probably false in terms of being any kind of a white nationalist leader. However, if he was to become one, if he was to speak in explicitly anti-Jewish terms and explicitly so-called racist or racially aware terms of all the blacks and browns that are invading, and if he was to actually take over and nationalize the media, try and hang most of the deep state, I think the American people would overwhelmingly support him. That's my opinion.
Well, I hope you're right, because I'd like to think we have enough support for that. But keep in mind, now Trump is used to working within the context of the system. When he had his first run, he finally forced the Republicans to accept him, but then they sabotaged him. I think he's still thinking it. I think he's actually more modest than us. I think he's a civic nationalist, not a racial nationalist. And I think it'd be he's used to working inside the government with the government forces. And he's surrounded by people who have a much more pro-government, pro-establishment, pro-legalistic stance than us. And I don't think that's really in itself good or bad. In that environment, he's going to think that way.
Well, excuse me to interrupt.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I hope I hope that they would support it, but I don't really count on that happening. Well, I think it's more likely. We're just speculating because none of us really knows. What I think, what I suspect, to be more likely is that the federal government becomes more and more insane. That you'll have local and state governments that do things on their own and ignore the federal government. Maybe not. Well, for example, border control, Texas,
right,
and other states are coming up in new things. There's kind of a loose alliance with some of the conservative governors on various things. And it might get to the point where the conservative states, well, we're not officially going to separate from the federal government, but we're just not going to officially recognize you. Or if you pass certain laws we don't like, we're just going to ignore it, not enforce it, and you don't have enough
proof. Let me interject, if you don't mind. So I think the wrong direction, the state-by-state thing, I think this is exactly what they want, is a balkanized America, a fractured America, isolated pockets of this, that, and the other, conservative here, blue, red. That's, in my opinion, that's the worst thing that could happen.
That's interesting, because I've been thinking that's the right way to go as well. But no, let's please, Paul, continue.
So, and it may indeed happen, and we may not have any choice. But I'm just thinking in terms of historically, the only way to restore our sovereignty and any kind of order and restore the civilization is for an authoritarian, totalitarian type of rule, at least initially. So my hypothetical was this. If the American people woke up tomorrow and they read in the paper that Trump has taken over, he's arrested CNN, he's arrested MSNBC, he's arrested most of the generals, right? I think at least half, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was more than half, of Americans would be overjoyed. That's my sense of it right now. But again,
yeah, but don't forget, he's got to operate within the context of the government. The left, the enemy still dominates the federal government. So he's got to try to maneuver in a way that he can get them out and weaken them. I agree that in the long run, we want a one-nation state with an authoritarian but still Republican-Democratic type of government. But I think this balkanization is a phase we're going to go through before we get to it. Because it's easier. The conservatives would not mind so much saying, okay, you liberals have your cities, we have our areas, just leave us alone. But the liberals aren't going to put up with that. They want to control and destroy all of America. So I think there is going to be a fight on a national level, but I don't think we're going to win the national level. If you look at the Spanish Civil War, when that broke out, the left basically dominated the federal government, and then it varied from on a localized basis. And if you look at the military ranks, for example, on the breakdown, the very top generals tended to go with the government because they're used to thinking in terms of government loyalty. The lower down officers, they tend to be with the revolution because they're more patriotic and they don't care what the pinkos in the government say. So I think it's going to be a lot more chaotic. The American people still have, the American people identify very strongly with a specific form of government, and it is very necessary for anybody who's trying to save the country to stress that they are fulfilling the Constitution, not violating the Constitution. Basically, the image of legality, whether it's true or not. So I think they're going to try. I think if they can, I suspect that if, say, Trump comes back in 2024, and again, we don't know what's going to happen, I suspect he's going to be more radical than he was in 2016, but I don't think he's going to say, okay, I hereby declare a national state of emergency, we do this. Again, I might be wrong. If he does do it, pulls it off, fine, more power to him. But I don't think he's going to try it. I don't think he's going to succeed even if he does try it, because there's too much chaos in the federal government.
Well, gentlemen, let's go to the phones. We have some callers anxiously looking to have their piece said. One of them is actually a fellow host here on Republic Broadcasting, Gerhard. We have Luca on the line from the show Luca's World on RBN. Hello, Luca. Hey, welcome to the show. And what did you have a question for Gerhard Lauck?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for doing so much work and working so hard. And this is like beyond the official narrative that I'd like to mention. And this goes to Paul. I was on the show with Jeremy from Kentucky last night, and Paul called. And not only did he start with the compliment for my show, but he insisted on speaking of Hitler's Germany. And it's beyond me. I woke up with a big smile on my face, and I said, I'm going to call that show and tell him thank you for doing that, because one thing people have forgotten, we're arguing about so many things and we're debating about the one thing that we've forgotten is humanity. It's how to be human and how to step outside yourself and give something to somebody else without accepting in return or expecting in return. And I find that really not only did you guys merit a whole lot for even touching on the National Socialist Movement, but I'm just blown away that you know we're becoming so open about such a taboo subject. And it's just to say thank you to Paul for that.
Well, you're certainly welcome. And I just come at it from a point of view. I think, you know, it's nice to have a nice breadth of knowledge, including an understanding of history and, you know, the political machinations of our government and various others. But in the end, we direly need clarity and simplicity. And to me, there's nothing more clear than the fact that without some sort of an authoritarian, borderline totalitarian structure, the Jews will dominate. And that's the only way in my mind, you know, a preliminary step towards eventually getting rid of them, you know, getting them out of this country, getting them somewhere, because throughout history, nobody has wanted them. And even though I agree with Gerhard that you can't obviously, you know, start right off the bat with Hitler and National Socialism, sooner or later, we're going to have to stop being afraid to name the problem. It's the 800-pound elephant in the room, and everybody's afraid to talk about it, but there's nothing more important.
So, you guys are...
Gerhard.
You guys are debating about Trump? I'm sorry. You guys are debating about Trump, and I'm saying to myself, well, it looks like JFK didn't like secret societies. It looks like he was trying to say that he was going to be for the people. We know what happened to him. Hitler did exactly the same thing. I think everybody else, Trump or Biden or anybody in Congress right now, besides pledging allegiance to Israel, they're not doing anything. I think they're Zionists, and I think they're all the same. So I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for the time, and I'll let you guys go. Much appreciated.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you, Luca.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, now, when I'm talking about propaganda, there's different types of you aim the propaganda at the at your target audience. If I'm talking to a mega guy, I'm going to take a more moderate line than if I'm talking to a national socialist. I'm by no means anti-NS. I open NS websites. I'm publicly NS myself, but I try to tailor my approach to the person I'm talking to, whether he's more moderate or more radical, what type of approach he's getting into. I think we can do both. But one of the advantages of having a decentralized operation with many websites, we have some that are very open and ass, and we have some that are much more moderate in terms of just getting people evolving in our direction. I'll keep mine also in terms of the power structure. So anyone who is running for public office in America is going to take, he's got to consider, he's got to get a lot of votes to do that. So what he does is he wants to position himself far enough away from the opposition that he's clearly alternative, but he doesn't want to put himself too far away where he's only appealing to a small sect. So regardless of what the guy's politics is, he's going to position himself somewhere between the far right and the far left. And another factor coming to power now, theoretically what they could do is if they come to power legally, they could put these people on trial, and after they convict them, you could disempower them, say, okay, these people have been convicted of a felony offense, and we don't necessarily have to shoot them or put them in a concentration camp or anything. We'll just say, okay, once you're convicted of a felony offense, you can no longer vote, you can no longer hold public office, you can no longer be a teacher at a public school, you can no longer have a position of influence in the media, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, even that would be
a mess. But I suspect the revolution, whether it's peaceful or not, afterwards we've got to put the pieces together, and you look at the major enemies and the followers, so to speak. Where the followers, you're a little bit more lenient because you don't want to, there's 70 billion people voted for Biden, you don't want to alienate or shoot all of them because it's going to screw up the economy, you're going to make too many enemies, because every time you have someone executed, he's got a friend or relative who doesn't like that, even if ideologically that person is an outside, not in the guy's side. What you do
well,
is
here
you
we have to, a we have another caller.
Their power.
Actually, yeah, let's get another question for you. We have Dan in Washington. Hello. Actually, that first one wasn't a question, but yeah, maybe Dan has a question for you, Gerhard. Hello, Dan.
Hey. Yeah, I just wondered, kind of on a different subject of Germany, do you... you know, part of this Eurasian plan is to kind of peel a country off of the EU do you think, and I know Merkel, like, built the Nord Stream 1 and the pipelines, and I think part of this Ukraine is to, definitely to keep Germany and Russia separate. Do you see any chance that Germany and Russia and Poland could just get along, and that if America collapses financially, do you see any hope for that, or...
Right now, the United States government is the primary enforcer for the New World Order capitalist Jews. That doesn't mean I'm anti-American, I'm anti-the government. If, as the American financial, the economy and the financial industry collapses, that's going to weaponize the Jews' most powerful tool. And eventually it's going to affect the U.S. military, too, because the military costs a lot of money to run. Today, Germany, the German government today is a vassal of the United States, and it's left-wing, and it's poisoned with a political correctness. So in terms of Germany today with the government and the somewhat half-brainwashed and half-wimpified society, I don't expect a lot to be coming from that quarter in the near future. I just perceive the situation in Ukraine being such that NATO wants to expand into the east to weaken Russia, because NATO, the European Union, the globalists, whatever you want to call them, they don't like Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, a few other countries, because those countries are not part of the New World Order. They don't like that. They want to take them over. They want to bring it all into one world government. So in that regard, I'm not saying I'm so much pro-Russian and Chinese as I'm against the globalists who are just trying to take them out for their own reasons. Well, it's ironic in the Ukraine is you have a Jew running the Ukraine, but the people in the Ukraine are basically nationalists, and some are nationalist sources. The Ukrainians don't want to be taken over by the Russians, but the Russians don't want the Ukraine to become a base for NATO and nuclear missiles within 6 minutes of Moscow.
Well, they're getting demonized again, though, as far as these war crimes we're hearing about in Ukraine. Well, I mean, a lot of it's being attempted to be pinned on the Russians, but as far as in the independent media, at least, we're finding that, you know, a lot of these so-called neo-Nazis, which of course are, you know, bad, working for Jews. It's almost like just Jewish mercenaries.
They say politics makes strange bedfellows. In World War II, Germany was a national socialist. Germany was allied with Japan, a non-white country, against the British Empire, which is white. That it's kind of ironic. The Ukraine reminds me a little bit, frankly, of Poland between the two world wars, is that shortly before World War II, the Poles, they had the globalists and the British encouraged the Poles to be super nationalistic and hostile towards Germany because they wanted an excuse to start a war with Germany. So they encouraged Polish aggression, the Poles trigger a German attack, and then the British leave the Poles to their own devices, and then the Russians come in on the other side and they get caught in between. So Poland suffered tremendously in that, not because they're bad people or good people, the Germans and Russians are good or bad people. They were used as cannon fodder by the international high finance. The same thing in Ukraine.
Well, right. Well, here, Dan. Dan,
Russia is not capitalist.
Dan, if you could hold on, stand by, Dan. Paul, on this topic, Paul, you had a World War II question for Gerhard, isn't that right?
Well, we're running out of time. We'll have to save it for another show. I did have a couple of, you know, interesting World War II questions and sort of hypotheticals that I would love to get Gerhard's take another time, but we can just go ahead and proceed with where we are now.
Well, Dan, is there a follow-up?
Well, yeah, I'll just say this and I'll quit, but it is very similar to World War II, and it seems like, again, the United States is funding the Bolshevik side, but this side, to me, Putin is kind of fulfilling the role of National Socialist Germany, and I feel like things are looking up. I mean, as far as for the downfall of the U.S. financial system, I think this could be the one. I mean, Putin might be the one to remove these guys from power if the U.S. collapses and the Jew world order is defeated. But anyway, I'll hang up and see what he says offline. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Yes, Gerhard, please.
Keep in mind that the sanctions against Russia backfired, and the ruble is stronger today than it was before, and the move to replace the dollar with an alternative currency as a world currency is gaining momentum. And those factors could have huge ramifications in terms of the international power struggle, power situation, constellation in the next few years and decades. Because the dollar now is basically a piece of paper, but we force people to take it because it's tied to oil and we have a strong military. Well, the alternative media would be based upon other goods, And the Arabs now getting the point where they're not necessarily only taking the U.S. dollar, they're going to be taking other currencies.
Okay, well, we only have about two minutes or so left. But, Paul, we'll have to have you back next time Gerhard comes on. We could dissect some of these topics some more. I hope you gentlemen have enjoyed the topics. And, Gerhard, are there any I don't know if everyone caught the web hosting website, Zensure Fry. Perhaps you should spell
it. If you want to contact us, the website that has very prominent banner ads for all three divisions, and Zensure Fry, Third Reich Books, and the public publications, if you go to nsdapao.info, that has banner sites for all three to find us, or another one is third-reich-books.com. Now, that does not have link to the political sites because that's officially more educational and historical. Or if you go to online with my name, Lauk, L-A-U-C-K, you can find us that way. Or for the books, too, if you just go to Google and type third-reich-books.com, you'll see the website come up at or very close to the top of it. So there's multiple ways you can find us online.
Well, I think we covered a lot of topics, well enough in a short amount of time. For any newcomers out there, new listeners, to just really have a lot to absorb and to share. So I thank you so much, sir, and I look forward to having you back again. We'll do this again in a month's time, if that works for you.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I appreciate being on there and a chance to talk. I'm very shy, and so I have to force myself to talk, obviously.
And Paul, thanks. I'm glad you gentlemen could get introduced.
Thank you, Richard. And I'll just close with, there was a reason why they sewed yellow stars on their clothes and wanted to put them in camps prior to getting them out of Europe. And we're seeing that reason very more clearly today than ever. That's my opinion.
Well, you know the old saying, next time no more Mr. Nice Guy.
I love that. Yeah, I love that poster.
Well, thank you so much, gentlemen, and just have a good week to you both. Folks, please support the station. For all this free speech, to keep all of this possible, we need your support. Listener support is what keeps this going. So please do what you can to donate, and stick around for Patrick Slattery with National Bugle Radio. So until next time, folks, transcend the construct. Regards.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.